Are you insane?
They are insane!
You're in the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
But Red Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kip, 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 Kip.
I like Christopher on the Arrow.
I don't like
Whoops. Because I might want to talk about Enterprise.
He wants to talk about Enterprise, but he wants to talk about Star Trek, but maybe not Discovery. This is...
Oh, I do. I do want to talk about it.
All right, so I'm Mike McCafferty here. I just want to talk about Star Trek, and I'm here with my good friend, Brian Weissel. We're going to toast a little red wine here.
Hello.
Brian, showrunner, creator of Hot Streets on Adult Swim, revving up to second season. How you doing, Brian?
February 24th, midnight, Hot Streets.
Two episodes, right?
Two episodes.
So it's they're packaging them as like a half hour, but that's okay because it's going to be the best thing you're going to see, bar none. Forget about Orville, forget about Discovery. Those are all garbage shows. We can definitively attest that these are better than those, can't we?
Oh yeah, you're going to love it.
Yes, because I wrote on it, and this guy created it.
So. Mike did voices as well?
That's right. Yeah. McGafferty, Agent McGafferty. And also Death Bat, and they don't know what that is. Am I spoiling it if I say Death Bat?
Mike plays that some mysterious characters.
Mysterious characters. Well, they're not going to realize it until afterwards because it's such a non sequitur thing to say.
Well, now everybody's going to remember Death Bat. At this point, we've said Death Bat so many times that
they're going to be thinking the whole arc of the series is about Death Bat.
Everybody's going to be waiting for Death Bat and think it's really important.
It is it'll be the biggest letdown you're ever going to have in your life.
Right.
But this season is so much better. Well, it's so much more like it's a mature second season.
Yeah, I would. I guess. The first season was a little bit... Somebody used the word... I don't remember who, but somebody used the word madcap for the first season. I think the second season, now that we've gotten to know the characters a little bit more, we were able to add a little bit more melodrama. So the stories somehow feel a little bit more grounded and real. And also at the same time, I guess the stories are a bit crazier. I don't know how we were able to find that kind of sweet spot.
I agree. I mean, we were able to put in, because now we sort of paid our fare as far as establishing who the characters were, like the first season, and what they're capable of. And now we could kind of actually see it in a really light, serialized nature, but within the episodes. And if you watch the trailer for it, and I hadn't seen it, because Brian has like from soup to nuts, like writes it and then like does all the animation. I hadn't seen the animation, and it's so much better than last season. So beautiful and so colorful. It's so great, and it's going to be. I think it's everything that like Star Trek wants to be. Where like every episode, you're going to a completely different world with completely different objectives.
Speaking of Star Trek, maybe we should talk about Star Trek, right?
I'm giving us our plug. I'm pulling whatever weight I have here on this show to say that you got to watch Hot Streets in about a month. But yes, I'm here to try to convince Brian, because here's the thing, like. It's weird because like the first season of Hot Streets was very episodic. Nothing really tied in except at the end when we just kind of loosely threw it together. And then this season's a little more serialized, and I feel like Discovery is doing the reverse.
Oh, well, good. Because I think am I correct that the theme of today's episode is you trying to convince me, a Star Trek fan, who's skeptical about Discovery, to watch Discovery. Is that what the gist of what we're doing?
That's what we're going to try. It'll probably fall apart in the first 5 minutes. Because we're having a little red wine, having anything to eat. It's going to be a bit of a train wreck. But that's what I pitched Brian. We worked this out. And now this is... I'm going to be playing the role of CBS All Access, Discovery, /
And I'm the bitter Star Trek fan who wants things to be the way they were.
Yes. Until 2 weeks ago, I was exactly where you were. And then these past two episodes have sort of swayed me. Now, did you watch any of those episodes, these first two?
No, I mean, just to give me some Discovery context, I watched 4 or 5 episodes of the first season. So that is where I'm at.
Yes.
Right now. But I have not seen anything of season 2.
Right. And whenever we were writing Hot Streets second season, I would come in like every week and I'd be like, did you watch it? And he'd be like, no. And I would just kind of shake my head. And I felt like indebted to having to report on it, to have to watch these things. But I could report nothing good to Brian. There was nothing I could say that was ever good. There was one episode I was like, it's kind of okay, but then it didn't matter. By that point in time, the horse was out of the barn. He was never going to watch it again.
And I guess just as a, I don't know, disclaimer, I know that saying that you don't like something is very unpopular. So I feel like that I'm going to come across as negative. And whenever you say you don't like something, it's never appealing at all. So I'm coming into this knowing I'm a villain, and you can hate me. You're allowed to not like my, and everybody would also, I think everybody is allowed and is entitled to have their own opinion onto what is Star Trek for them.
Yeah.
It's almost like Star Wars. Like people watch the new Star Wars and they're like, this is not Star Wars. And that's okay for that person. It's for individual, you're allowed to have your own opinion and it's fine. Some people watch the new Star Trek Discovery and it's like, this is Star Trek to me. So that I respect that. And I don't think anybody that likes Discovery, even the first, you know, season, that they're bad people or foolish for thinking that this is Star Trek.
No.
But I have my own feelings about what Star Trek is No,
that's absolutely correct. I mean, like, Star Trek, I mean, like, we're all debating this, like, 50-year-old franchise as though it's somehow history or somehow it's going to have any sort of, like, relevance on anyone. It's all just kibitzing on nonsense. But you're right. But I will say that predominantly people did not like the first season of Discovery. So you are
really?
Not... Yes. You are not in the minority on that. There were some stalwarts who were like, no, I like this, and they were all rationalizing just the... And I didn't like it. I mean, like, every single podcast I came out, I was like, God, I hate this.
I remember you trying to be upbeat about it and liking episodes. I remember there was a part of you that liked this.
I was like, yes, and I was trying to, like, there are two different, like, you know, one, I was, there was a portion of me where I was, like, in contention for, like, possibly pitching shows, where I was like, well, I can't come out and, like, you know, shit all over Star Trek, and then there's a part of me that was like, if I have a show called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek, shouldn't I love all my children equally, you know? But then, like, if you listen towards the end of the run of that, I just couldn't do it. It was so nonsensical and so much garbage. And then I basically came to it like, I have to like what I like. And even if, like, let's say Alex Kurtzman said, like, hey, man, I was going to hire you for this show and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you need me on a show. You need you, Brian, on this show, because we are like the canaries in the coal mine saying, this is not Star Trek. This is nonsense. This is garbage, right? I mean, like, you can't have yes men on a show, right? You have to have people who say, like, this is, at some level, this is not working, you know?
Right. Maybe we should talk about what Star Trek means to the both of us. Like,
right.
What, because you could have a show with spaceships and phasers and teleporters.
Right.
And call it Star Trek. Also to make me, you know, as unlikable as possible. I detested all of the new movies, the new Star Trek movies with Chris Pine. Or I thought the actors were great, or et cetera. To me, it just was not what I would consider Star Trek.
So what, like, what to you is Star Trek, Brian?
So to me, I think in order to be, and I think people, even this kind of conversation has been going on for a long time. Even when DS9 came out, like, that's not Star Trek. That's, you know, something else. It's dark and gritty and character driven, but not, doesn't have the Gene Roddenberry morality and the principles. So to me, for it to be Star Trek, it does have to have what I like about the original Star Trek, The Next Generation, Voyager, and even on occasion DS9, are these little morality plays.
Mm-hmm.
That are heavily thematic morality tales that tells you a little bit of something about humanity, and it's about inclusivity and growth, and it gives you hope for the future. that to me is an important part, and the prime directive,
yeah,
which has all of these principles laid out, that to me is an important part of Star Trek. And if it doesn't have that aspect, to me, it's not Star Trek. And for me personally, I don't think serialized is the way to go for a show like this. So Mike, what do you think?
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think it has to be an aspirational show. Like you said, it's about the future, but it's also about the future of humanity. You know, like, can humans develop to the point where we are better than who we are now? You know, and when we're put in those situations, like those little morality plays, will we make the right decisions? You know, and sometimes we won't. It has to be on that kind of Occam's razor of like, boy, this is a really tough one, but humanity, in the end, humanity prevails. And
I think to some degree, I feel like Gene Roddenberry gets shit on undeservedly a lot of times for saying that he did not want character conflict and he didn't understand how to write stories because of this. So I feel as though I tend to defend Gene Roddenberry, his vision for the type of show that he wanted to make. Because a lot of people like to say, well, Gene Roddenberry would turn in his grave if he saw, you know, nonstop character conflict. But he wouldn't.
I mean, he went through two different phases. He went through the original series, which was all character conflict. You know, like Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
But the characters still all respected each other.
It was a workplace conflict. Like, it's like, I will disagree with you in a workplace thing, but I'll always call you a friend at the end of the day.
Right.
Which was great, you know. Like, as we see shows like Discovery, where, like, in the first couple of episodes, like, Michael Burnham basically turns against her captain. And, like, nerve pinches her and says, fire on the Klingons. Like, that is not workplace trust. You know, it's like, okay, it's a terrible choice.
Is there a precedent? I just want to talk about nerve pinching just a little bit here.
Yes.
To deviate, because I think that's why we're here. I think there's a precedent for humans using the nerve pinch, but for me, it feels weird whenever a human is able to nerve pinch. I feel like it should only be a Vulcan thing. Has there been a precedent of humans being able to use the nerve pinch?
I don't know. Well, Data could do it.
Well,
he did it in Unification.
Yes, that's right.
So, like, I almost feel like it's like a strength kind of issue. You know, like if I had to, like, say it's either... Because if Data's doing it and that's not canon, then it has to be a strength issue. But Michael Burnham's not that strong. I mean, maybe she is. Maybe she, like, pulls off her shirt and she's like, you know, like, super ripped.
The reveal that's coming.
Yeah, it's going to be, like, huge forearms, you know, like, just, like, huge, like, maybe she has, like, those little, like, tensile strength things, like, the little grip thing, you know, she works out on. She has these huge forearms that we don't see underneath the outfit.
Well, I don't like the idea that Data is able to nerve pinch.
It was a funny bit. Spock say nicely done or something, like some weird thing. It was a funny bit, and, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it, like, to have Michael Burnham be able to apply the Vulcan nerve pinch was always a little. I guess anyone can do it.
I always felt too that in the original series we were always learning about new abilities that the Vulcans had, and I feel like they're just not as alien as they used to be. Like, Spock would. I don't remember that. There's like an episode where he can like see through walls, I think.
No, he could put his hands on the wall and like mind meld with the person to open the door. I remember that. That was like, it was like third season or something. And he could also, in A Taste of Armageddon, he just like looked at this girl. He just stared at this girl and made her like bring the communicator over to him and like open up the communicator. Do you remember that? Like the Omega Glory, like where like they're fighting. Like it's the one where like the Yangs and the Calms and he just stares at her, which is pretty badass, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Like, why doesn't he just, like, stare at everyone all the time and just make everyone do whatever he wants, you know? you're right. The Vulcans are the most pedestrian aliens now. They're just, oh, well, you're a Vulcan. You get to do this.
They're just intellectuals.
Yeah, they're just intellectuals who have these powers, which, you know, we kind of sort of...
Mind meld, yeah, and they can put you to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. So they're definitely boring, which they shouldn't be. They should still be very, very interesting. But even in Discovery, they make them sort of boring. Because Michael Burnham, she flips between being... See, like, I'm CBS Alexa, I'm not pitching you. So, okay, so here I am. Hi, Brian, audience member. I'm CBS All Access. And
I'm Brian. I did not like the first season of Discovery. I thought it was boring. It had none of the principles of what I would want from a Star Trek series. It was dark and gritty, and the Klingons were almost unbearable, I would say, in the way that they spoke. I did not like the first season. Why should I continue to watch, and why should I try the second season?
Well, Brian, we here at CBS All Access, we hear your concerns, and we listened. We listened. Remember when we said we weren't going to show Spock? We're going to show Spock. Do you like Spock?
I like, well, I like Cybok.
We're going to take Cybok off the table for a while. We hear you. I'm like a customer service representative here. Thank you for calling CBS All Access.
Is Zachary Quinto reprising his role as Spock?
We understand you enjoy Zachary Quinto, like La Quinto Inn. But at this point in time, we have a different actor, which I don't remember his name. He is bearded right now. Do you like beards? Are you a millennial? Do you like beards?
Is he good? What did you think? This is Brian talking to Mike. What did you think of
Zachary Quinto?
No. The new guy.
We haven't seen him yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're two episodes in, but he is the driving force of second season.
Right.
So, but like still unseen.
Mike sent me the screen grab of Christopher Pike in this very Star Trek-esque outfit. And I got very excited because I do not like the costume design on Discovery. I think everything is really dark and it reminds me of like the X-Men black jumpsuits.
Mm-hmm.
From 20 years ago, I got very excited when I saw that screen grab because, like, okay, this is bright and colorful. This I can buy this as Star Trek. I got excited.
Yes,
I was like, wow, are they wearing this now? I don't know. What did I text you? Is this the new costume?
I said yes for the Enterprise, and then like he changes into the Discovery outfit.
Great,
but those costumes are coming.
Oh.
Like
are they?
Well, like those are the new outfits for the Federation. So, like, because they make a comment in the first episode, saying like, "Oh, like Discovery gets all the new technology, we get the new outfits," and then like Pike says, "Like, do not covet thy neighbor's technology or something." So, like, so those are the new outfits which are coming down the Pike.
Here's a question because we mentioned Enterprise in the very beginning of this. As a person who has not watched, Enterprise would be the only Star Trek series I haven't seen.
Yes, and I will CBS All Access you on that as well, because I've changed my opinion on that. I'm going to have a second glass of wine, midday, half a glass.
I'm ready to make that Enterprise journey. I'm ready to go to it. I watched the pilot, and
pilot's bad.
You know what? It's very, I guess, bland. Like, the characters are all very bland. It's hard for me to root for any of these characters.
But, yes.
I thought it was bold in some of the decisions that they made. It had kind of a cinematic feel, almost, mm-hmm. I would say, that I wasn't expecting. It didn't feel like, all right, we're done with DS9. This is the new Star Trek. It did look like they were trying a new approach.
They were trying to make that, like, they scaled all the technology back. It was like a bold, interesting choice, and said, okay, how can we link this up to the original series? How can we go back to basics? How can we see the early days? And Broken Arrow is not a good pilot. I mean, it's okay, but like you got like Klingons running through cornfields and weird aliens that turn into like 2D creatures that like slide under doors, like, mm-hmm. With like 1998 graphics.
So does my question, I guess, is since Enterprise's kind of goal, it seemed, was mm-hmm. to bridge the gap of pre-Star Trek to new Star Trek, and I feel like that's what Discovery is trying to do as well. Is Discovery taking a big poo-poo all over Enterprise? What's happening here?
Well, it's going to, in the respect of technology. This season especially. So, like,
can these two coexist? Does this retcon Enterprise in any way?
Here's the interesting thing, and we talked about this in the podcast before. Hiccuping is a good sign when you're drinking red wine. I'm turning into like a 1950s cartoon. I'll be seeing how dry I am in a second here. So if they are following the Kelvin timeline, which I have had a long belief that they are, that this is Bad Robot, J.J. Abrams, this is all through the production company, which they're licensed to do through. So,
and you know my opinion of the Kelvin timeline.
You don't like the Kelvin timeline?
I don't like it.
But I have a feeling Picard's going to be... Picard series is going to be the Kelvin timeline.
Sure it is. It's got all the same people.
Yeah, it's all
the same people from Discovery.
So contractually, they kind of have to do it. They have to make everything 25% different. But oddly enough, Enterprise would be the one show which is not affected by the Kelvin timeline because it's like before that, you know what I mean. So like oddly enough, like out of everything that we'd hold on to, Star Trek Enterprise would be the one thing that we could say like, it's still the same.
Right.
So, I like the third and fourth season. I told you this before. Jeffrey Combs, friend of Hot Streets.
We had the pleasure of working with several Star Trek actors, and Jeffrey Combs was one of them.
Do you want to? Yeah, because we have. Do you want to? Jeffrey Combs.
Who else? We have. We had
Jonathan
Frakes.
Robert Picardo.
And the thing is that we were looking, when we were writing it, we were looking to these actors, not because I'm a fan of Star Trek, but that is definitely part of it. But Star Trek has just incredible actors.
Yeah.
There's so many incredible actors involved with Star Trek that you just want to work with them. And when we cast the roles for these parts, it wasn't like, hey, do your Star Trek character. I just wanted to work with these actors. And Jeffrey Combs is one of them. And obviously, Jeffrey Combs has a lot more to him than just Star Trek. But
every time, especially, you know, and that's why I don't know why I'm not, why I'm pushing Enterprise when I'm supposed to be pushing Discovery on you as the representative, but every time he shows up as Shran in Enterprise, he makes all those boring characters so much better.
Right.
Like, he just, like, rolls in. He's sort of like Ensign Ro. Remember Ensign Ro came
yes,
in and just, like,
great.
Kicked everyone's ass? Like,
she's great.
Every single, like, character, like, got better. He goes in and he makes Captain Archer so much better. Just, like, and Scott Bakula's not a bad actor, but he made some choices, I think, as far as his character. It's like, you know, there's not a lot of wiggle room there. Shran comes in there and Jeffrey Combs like pivots on him and makes him a better character because of the way he defines Archer as a human.
I don't know if this is the case because we talked to him for a little bit. Was his character supposed to be recurring? Because I think another interesting thing about Jeffrey Combs as an actor is that when you work with him, you want to work with him more.
Yeah, yeah.
because Reanimator was kind of recut to make him the star. The Frighteners was... they kept writing new lines for him because he was so good. And I think they kept bringing him back on DS9 as so many different characters just because he's so good. But not only is he good, but he's so committed, even in Hot Streets, to the dumbest roles that you want to continue working with him. And also just being a really cool, open guy who loves to talk about acting and what he's done. So when we cast him in Hot Streets, when we were done, we cast him again in another part because he's so good and we wanted to work with him again. So I just wonder if Enterprise, that happened again. Did he come on? Or at this point, they just know how good he is and they knew that he was going to steal the show.
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like with Deep Space Nine, you can see because he played played Wayun, who was not a Vorta. Maybe it's a Vorta. I can't remember what it was. the mouthpiece for the Dominion, basically.
Right.
And initially, they went through a couple of different iterations. Like, they had, like, a female one and another male one. But then eventually, it was just Jeffrey Combs. Right. And every time that character would get killed, they'd bring on,
hilarious.
Yeah, another copy of him.
Such a good idea.
Which was funny because, the girl was actually another girl they used many times in Next Generation. She played a couple Romulans. But you're right, they fell in love with Jeffrey Combs. And I have to feel like in Enterprise, they were just like, let's just get Jeffrey Combs. He's so good.
Right.
And then once they saw how good he was, you could tell they were writing him more and more and more. You could see how, you latch onto a character, it's like, we got to write him, you know?
Right.
So he's the peeny squeezy of our...
Yeah.
Is that too deep? Is that too deep of a dive?
Yes, I think that is too deep of a dive.
All right, that's fine. All right, so meanwhile, I have not done a good job of shifting you over to Discovery, but maybe to Enterprise. Maybe Enterprise, I've got you.
Well, you're trying to convince me in Enterprise as well, but I am going to watch Enterprise. I guess I've already been persuaded on that. I am going to watch that.
I will give you specific episodes. I've watched them.
I'm going to watch them all. I don't.
Oh, you like going through all of it.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Aaron Pierce's, Adam Garland, who's friends of Aaron Pierce, he's going through all of them right now, so... It's a monumental task now to go through all of them.
What I've done, and is because I've shifted what I want out of Star Trek onto another show because I like, I guess what I miss in Star Trek is that heavy thematic component,
mm-hmm.
and also that optimism that comes from the show.
Yeah,
and I watch a teen. Basically an anime for teenage boys called One Piece that's very heavily thematic and it has this very positive image. And right now, that's all I watch. And it's almost like I've taken my Star Trek energy, what I would want from Star Trek, and I've put it on this new show. And because there's 1,000 episodes, I can never run out of it, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And they're still making more, right?
Yeah, so if you're a Star Trek fan and you're not quite getting what you want, I don't think One Piece has the same thematic elements or even the same kind of stories or complexities. But for me, it really hits the spot.
I've watched a few One Piece. I couldn't... That was when I was just so busy going to grad school and working with you. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so tired. And Sarah's like, what are you doing up so late? I was like, I'm watching One Piece. It's like, stop, go to bed. Yeah, but we got to see Luffy's doing this. it's a good show, though. I will say it's a good show. It's interesting because as we talk about Discovery, Orville's on right now, which was this strange mirror image. It's almost like a children's show in some ways of Discovery and of Next Generation. And that's what Kieran likes to watch, too. And that has some of that optimism that you like, but it's still not a good show.
Right. And the optimism has to be legitimate. It can't be a forced thing.
It is legitimate. It is. He's just doing Next Generation, but then the storylines are just... It's weird because he's got, I can't remember if it's Brandon Braga or who... He has a couple of Star Trek writers on the show.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But, they miss the mark. This latest episode we watched, it was really cool because the first half of it starts out with this alien species, pre-warp technology saying, okay, we're going to send a message out into outer space. They have all these radio antennas saying, is anyone out there? And that's how the teaser starts. And then the Orville gets the message and they're so excited. Everyone on the ship's so excited. It's first contact. And in the Orville universe, everyone's so excited for first contact. It's this exciting, cool thing. We get to meet a new species. And it's the first half of it's so great, and the second half kind of falls off a cliff because it's such a stupid premise. Right. It's I won't even get into it. But you're oh, this is so great. And then it's who steered the episode in this direction? So I'm not gonna push in the Orville, but I'm telling you, the optimism is there. It's if Discovery and Orville married, we'd have a great show. We'd have Next Generation.
That reminds me, another actor we got to work with is Ray Wise.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get to meet him when
I didn't, no. No, I'd love to.
But that episode where he wakes up, that it's kind of they accidentally make first contact. Do you remember the name of that episode? in The Next Generation with Ray Wise, where he wakes up on the Enterprise, and he's their species hasn't evolved enough, so they shouldn't have made first contact. But he wakes up in just wonder. He looks outside and sees space. It's a beautiful performance.
That's First Contact. That's the name of the episode. It's First Contact, I think, isn't it?
Where it's like a movie, but is there an episode?
There's an episode called First Contact. No. I'm sorry. No, that's Who Watches the Watchers, I think it's called.
I thought that was, I mean, just almost due to his performance, because it's so strong. It's not even like an exceptional story.
Yeah.
But his performance is so strong, and just the wonder of being in space. And
that's the one with the Picard, right? The Picard is angry, right?
Right.
That's we just watched First Contact, the Next Generation episode with Kiernan, where Riker sleeps with Bebe Neuwirth.
Oh, okay.
Remember that one? Yeah. He's like, sleep with me, you know?
Yeah.
And then like
that was weird.
Yeah, that was a weird one. But no, First Contact, or I think it's Who Watches the Watchers. That's a great. You're right. That is a great episode. And I didn't know Ray Wise. That was him.
Oh yeah, he's been in a couple episodes.
Ray Wise is so good. He was in News Watchers on Adult Swim, which I did an episode of that, and he was so funny on that. He plays a very funny character, would you say?
He was really delightful, and I had a good time working with him.
He's fully committed.
Oh yeah,
whatever he does, he's fully committed. So
he knows the episode name of every single thing he's ever done, and I think he's got like 1,000 credits. So when I asked him about Star Trek, he said the title immediately.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure he gets asked about that one a lot too. I mean, it's such an like, yeah. and that is a good episode, because it sort of does define why First Contact is such a tricky thing. You know, where it's same thing with the episode First Contact. Remember that one? Like they were just getting ready to develop warp, and like Riker was on the planet as he had like, you know, he was like kind of like spying, and then they captured him, and then Bebe Neuwirth sleeps with him, but the president of that planet's like, we're not ready. You need to come back like in 20 or 50 years. And
oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. I remember that now.
It was such
I forgot about how that ended.
Yeah, like such a good like and really good character actors on that. Like, but he was just like, you know, I totally get it. The Federation is cool, but we're not ready. Come back. So this episode of Orville is very similar to that, but then it just goes off the rails. So they're governed by astrology, and whoever's born in this one sign is like consigned to like these penal colonies, and so anyway.
All right, just to get us back on track a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, let's get back on track.
As Discovery Star Trek, I just want to, I guess let's, we, I think, feel like we have to poke a little bit into DS9.
Okay.
Because my personal decision, which again, a lot of people are going to disagree with, is DS9 Star Trek? For me, I would say no, it's not Star Trek.
Okay.
I like it, though. So I don't feel that as soon as Latinum was introduced as a major currency source, it really confuses the messaging of Star Trek. And I love Quark, but I don't think his character should exist within the realm of Star Trek. And the greed and all these things that they kind of introduce is not a part of, for me, the components of what I want in Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, like, Star Trek, like, Deep Space Nine, like, I understand what you're saying. Deep Space Nine was, like, an overcorrection of Next Generation, which
right.
was, like, as you were talking about, was, like, okay, no conflict, to Deep Space Nine, which became all conflict among the characters, at least originally, and then,
yeah.
like, seventh season, they're on the holodeck, you know, doing Ocean's 11 heists.
And I just said that I don't like serialization in Star Trek, but I did like the serialization in DS9.
Yeah, yeah.
And I liked the show, and despite what I would think of what a Star Trek is, I did ultimately enjoy the show.
It's like the initial premise of what is on the fringes of Federation space. Like, that was like, what is like this outpost on the fringes? And so like, that's why I'm okay with like Latinum, because it's like, well, there are species which still have greed, which still have money, as you know. I mean, so that's how Quark kind of exists. I mean, I know they're like the Ferengi are part of the Federation.
And there's an episode, I think, in The Next Generation where Riker bets Latinum with the Ferengi, right? There's an episode where they introduce Latinum in
Do they?
The Next
okay.
Generation. with a Ferengi that may or may not have been played by Armin Shimmerman that wasn't Quark.
Okay. I don't remember that. Wait, so was it early or was it later?
Late. It was like season 7.
I think. Well,
and again, I might be totally wrong, but I thought I remembered something like that.
It could be, because like at that point in time, they were running concurrently. So, like Latin probably became more of a thing. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, right. We want to kind of influence one with the other.
It could have been season 6 or season 7.
Yeah, because they happened around. Because remember that there was that one episode where Bashir was on with Data. I can't remember.
Right.
Or maybe Data was on with Bashir in Deep Space Nine. It was hard to remember which.
No, I think Bashir was on Next Generation.
That's right, because yeah, Data was dreaming or some weird thing, and like, oh, we'll have Bashir on it. You know, we got to cross this stuff over. So, yeah, I mean, like, Next Generation was an overcorrection of the original series, where Roddenberry's literally saying, I don't like conflict in 24th century utopia. Like, no one has conflict. The Deep Space Nine was like an overcorrection of TNG, and then Voyager was like this weird medium of like conflict, but we get along.
Can you convince me that Discovery is Star Trek? Because I'm saying, to me, DS9 was not Star Trek, but I liked it.
I can convince you that the second season of Discovery, the first two episodes, is Star Trek. That's what I can do. That's all I can give you.
That's interesting.
Because I will tell you that the Discovery season 1, we can consider it now as season 0. Where it is all sandbox workshop.
I don't need to see the rest of season 1.
There's nothing you need to see of season 1. Because it's also... You can watch the first episode of season 2, which is, I think, free on YouTube right now. And you can watch that. And they have a little, like, previously on.
All right. I mean, I guess it worked, and that I'm going to try it. I'm going to give it season 2 a shot. What do you think of this... Giorgio spinoff?
Giorgio.
What do you think of this? What are we supposed to do with that information as fans?
I don't know. I mean, someone said on the internet that this is all to market to the Chinese market.
Oh, okay.
Like this,
kind of like
show.
What they did with Now You See Me. They have a Chinese. Sequel for Chinese that's going to come out in China only.
Really?
Yeah. So Now You See Me has a spinoff in China. The Now You See Me movies with Jesse Eisenberg,
right? Yeah.
The popular magician caper series that we all love,
which was so bizarre because halfway through it becomes like magic is real. Did you watch the first
one? Oh yeah, and the second one is crazy too. The first one is, I mean, I thought they're funny. I thought they were really funny.
Well, they're funny, but like halfway through, it's like, yeah, magic's real. Why not? Like, right? You know, it's like the first one, like the first half, it's like it's all about illusion.
Did you see the second one?
No, I haven't seen.
Do you know anything about Woody Harrelson in the second movie?
No.
See the second one. You See Me too. It'll blow your mind into how bizarre it is. I think the first one is funnier because you're right. It's like, yeah, we're treating magic as real now, especially like that really weird ending with the carousel. The sequel is eye opening and bizarre in its own right.
I should watch it because the first half of the movie like is on the premise of like we're going to like blow your mind with all this illusion. It's like the Sting movie where it's like you don't know what's going to happen, and then they're just like, oh no, by the way, magic's real, and like this was all magic, and like, wait, but you just switched movies halfway through. And like, great. So if the second one is just more magic, and then it, you know, I'm all in.
I don't want to spoil it for you. I think the second one, to those who've seen it, maybe one listener, there's a component related to Woody Harrelson that made the theater just it's uproariously funny in a strange way.
Oh, I have to watch it then. I absolutely have to watch it. All right, so that'll be in the queue, in the Netflix queue, if it's on probably not on Netflix. I don't know where it's at.
It might be. Yes,
could be. Yeah. All right, so here's my final pitch here. I'll because you know we don't want to keep on belaboring all this, but and I don't have anything ready for this, but we finally have Star Trek. It was abundantly clear in the first season that you can't have a show without a captain. They tried several different iterations to not have a captain, or to have a bad captain. And it's just like having, it's like it was a donut, you know, but you want a cake. You don't want a donut. You want to have a cake. When Christopher Pike shows up, he reminds you of why Star Trek is so good. It's that it's almost like having this character who has to make the most difficult decisions in these moral quandaries, and he has to be the one who has to make the difficult decisions, and sometimes it's wrong.
So what you're saying is season two, they've corrected course, and then at some point CBS made a decision to replace the showrunners.
Twice. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
We'll see, I guess, how the season goes.
Yes. Well, this is like, I believe after this episode, after episode two, I can't vouch for anything past episode two because I think that's right. When they replace the showrunners. But the first two episodes, I'm telling you, they are Star Trek. And especially the second episode, they beam down to a planet and there's a mystery and they have to solve it.
And are you saying, because I think, you know, Saru was, is that, am I pronouncing
Saru,
Saru,
yeah.
Saru is one of the more interesting characters.
It's, yeah.
And Michael Berman, the actress, is quite good. I also just felt, when I was watching those first group of episodes, that I was having a hard time liking the crew members or finding any real depth to them or what usually a Star Trek show... there's a collection of 10 characters that are all very interesting.
Yeah.
Do we have that in Discovery?
You will now, because now you have like an all-time, like, you have a dad figure. You have a person who is stable. We know he's going to be stable. He's Christopher Pike. We see him in the Menagerie.
Yeah.
But I mean, like at least we know, I mean, like who knows, maybe he's Mirror Universe. I mean, they can always screw with us, but...
Yeah.
I mean, until he blows up and goes into a crazy beeping
chair. Right, right. I like what ultimately happens to him.
He is afforded the worst fate of any Star Trek character. He, in a universe where there are holographs and he ends up in a chair where he can only beep. It's so sad. It is the worst fate by any character. But until then, he is such a great character. And he allows these other characters, because like you have Michael Burnham and Saru who like have these insane captains, right? These like you have Lorca, who's like an insane, hard-ass Mirror Universe captain, and they're like flailing around, and so they can't define themselves because their dad is this abusive dad. I used this in the last podcast. It's like you can't have a show about a happy family when you have an abusive dad, right?
Right.
So like in all these other shows, like I mean, maybe dad's a hard-ass, or maybe he's nice, whatever he is. Like you know, Kirk. You know, or Picard or Sisko, they're always going to be the dad. They're always going to be like, okay, we got you.
And Janeway the mother.
Janeway the mother, right. Finally, we have Pike who's like, okay, I got it. You can go ahead and be whoever you want to be, and then you're going to bring all your problems to me, I'm going to figure it out, and then you're going to have to deal with it. So that's my pitch for you, is that we finally have a Star Trek show because we finally have a captain who is someone who is laudable, who's going to make the difficult choices, occasionally the wrong choice, but you're always going to trust him.
Is it still serialized?
It is. At least in the first two episodes, they go on adventures which don't necessarily have consequences. Like they are self-contained episodes where it's like, okay, we did this thing, and then there's like on the fringes and the bookends, there's serialization, right?
Right.
So it's like, oh, our next mission is to go off here. Like, oh, the red angel, you know, we have to go over here. Oh, this is totally weird. What is this all about? We've solved it. And, oh, this gives us another clue to the Red Angel. So.
I see.
So it's like...
The Red Angel, yeah.
It's right. It's kind of the overarching thing, but it doesn't interfere with the story inside.
Got it.
So.
I wonder, if we're bringing Pike back, we're evoking the lost pilot of Star Trek, we're making this... Was Pike ever really made canon in the show until after the fact? I mean, oh, no, of course, in the original show they brought him back.
Yeah, in the Menagerie.
He is
canon, yeah. So.
So let's see if they go all the way and bring back that original Spock and see how he turned into the cool, collected, logical Spock we all know. And let's see, we'll get the more feral... crazy Spock from the pilot.
Oh, I think you're going to be happy with that because, yes, yeah. He is.
He was a bit weird. He was a bit wacky.
He's a smiling Spock.
Right.
He smiled when the weird little plants were making sound.
Is that all that I'm remembering? Because I'm just remembering a super crazy Spock. It's probably just him laughing or smiling that I'm remembering.
No, he's smiling Spock. You're going to have smiling Spock. And you're going to have number one. Majel Barrett is being played by Rebecca Romijn.
Romijn,
yeah. She's going to be in the show.
Oh, that's
kind
of cool.
So, yeah. So, as much as they tried to like be like, this isn't your father's Star Trek. It's like, well, it is kind of your father's Star Trek. We're going to have Pike. We're going to have number one. We're going to have Spock. So they've kind of...
They're trying to make people like me get into it.
I think they realized that they were trying to do everything that wasn't Star Trek. They're like, this isn't your father's Star Trek. This isn't Star Trek. We want to watch Star Trek.
Okay, now, what about these awful, clunky, boring Klingons? What are we doing about that?
Well, I can't promise you that we're not going to see them again because they're going to be in episode 3 on Thursday. But I can promise
they're
you
they're an atrocity,
less.
I would say.
Yeah, they're problematic. But now they have hair.
Right?
they heard all the hoop-de-doo.
Okay, so I think, I know you've talked about this a lot, but the deal, the whatever the bad robot deal to develop the Star Trek, or whatever the overall deal is, that they have to change 25% of things, of anything from the original series, at a price, right? They license different aspects.
That's what I've heard. That's, yeah, that they so they can make the Enterprise, but it has to be 25% different. Like those costumes that you saw.
And they have
like,
to pay for it too.
If they,
each individual element, like
that's what I've heard.
Like
yeah,
Sarek to get Sarek.
Yeah, so if you want a Tribble, like they've already got Tribbles, but let's say they want to have, well, like Harry Mudd. I'm sure they had to be like, okay, we've got to license him out. We've got to license out Harry Mudd. So
to the original, maybe even to the original writer or something.
Well, that's a possibility too. Yeah, I mean, like you might have to pay that original writer some sort of
the Tom Paris scenario.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
from going, they couldn't use.
What was his name? Was his name Lorca? I feel like his name was Lorca for some reason.
Wait, that's the character.
I know,
Jason,
but like,
Isaacs.
It's something with an L. It's something.
But me and Mike talk about this all the time. But it seems pretty obvious that the character from The Next Generation, from the Wesley Crusher episode, is supposed to be the Tom Paris character from Voyager. It seems that way, even though the actor who plays the character disputes that. But
no, it's absolutely that.
But they don't want, in order to use that character going into Voyager, they would have to pay the original writer to do that. So, okay, his name is now Tom Paris. It's not the character from The Next Generation anymore. And same with the Vulcan from The Lower Decks, who becomes a regular in Voyager.
Right, like, right, exactly, yeah.
He's got a new name, even though he looks the same.
His Nicholas Locarno, that's what his name was, Locarno. So yeah, they just changed it to Paris. They just.
And what's the name of the Voyager from The Lower Decks going into Voyager?
I know.
I feel like that's something that... Not many people talk about. Maybe they do.
I wanted to find that guy, but I guess he has some health issues, so I was kind of like, oh.
He was great, and he was so great on Lower Decks, which
I know.
I really love season 7 of Star Trek, The Next Generation. A lot of people say that it's the worst season, but I disagree.
I would go back and forth in some of those episodes, but like that Lower Decks is great. Was that 7th season?
Yeah.
Okay, like that one was great. For sure, that was great. Then they get some like kind of like we're out of ideas kind of ideas, which maybe is good too. You know, like the train conductor on the holodeck.
My thought just has to go to that Beverly Crusher ghost episode.
Oh, Sub Rosa.
Sub Rosa.
Oh, well, yeah.
Which I thought was just wonderful. I thought it was wonderful.
One of the lowest rated episodes.
Also, that one where they all start turning into animals is great.
Oh yeah, Genesis. I think. Yeah, we've talked about that. That one was that's a great one. Except it should have been a two-parter because it was just so quick. You know, I'm like, it's a good idea, but...
I like the craziness, I guess, of season 7.
Oh, yeah, I love it, too. I love... I was talking with Kiernan about... what's the Nurse Ogawa turning into, like, a lemur?
Oh!
She's walking with her knuckles on the... it's so funny.
Yeah.
How all these people, like, trying to do their, like, their actor exercises of, okay, you're a lemur. Act like a lemur.
And the Data multiple personality thing that happens in one of those episodes.
Yeah, masks. Yeah.
Masks.
Yusi Wasaka. Yeah.
I loved it. I loved it.
It's so bonkers. The doctor, Kim.
We're deviating off topic too much, right?
Well, yeah. So let's so Brian, we'll cap this off. Have I convinced you to try the first two episodes of Discovery at no cost to you?
Yes.
All right. There we go.
But I'm not gonna. I'll watch it at some point. I'm not, you know, super excited, but
no.
I will give it a shot. I mean, I love Star Trek, and I would say I came into this thinking no way in hell that you would convince me, because I really, really, really disliked what I saw of Discovery. So you did a pretty good job convincing me.
Well, thank you. Yeah, me too. And if I hadn't been as adamant about you as hating this as much as you did, I wouldn't have been over here trying to convince you. But I got turned around too. I was like, huh. Kim in the last episode conjectured that maybe we're suffering from Stockholm syndrome, that like we've been like so tortured that like
maybe anything that just resembles the barest.
Yes, like any bit of kindness, like oh here's Pike. Oh thank you. You know, like
what's the deal? I mean. What's the deal that we still got this like amoeba engine?
Oh, the spore drive. Yeah, they did the spore drive once, but it's not such a big thing because I think they're trying to get away from it.
Okay,
it's just kind of nonsense. But they have to justify one of the characters being there, like Anthony Rappas, Stamets, because he's an astro mushroom guy. What's astro fungal? Mycelial network. Anyways, he all he does is study mushrooms, and this is the wine talking. And so like now it's like, well, we're not using spore drives, so why should we care about this character? So they have to kind of like find ways to bring him in.
I see.
Yeah. So it's a little bit, and then Tilly's on it. Ugh.
They got to give him a new skill. Oh, Tilly,
Tilly almost tips over the.
Yeah,
the
card. I don't want any meta stuff in Star Trek. So when she's a fan of the characters or geeks out, it's very problematic for me.
Tilly comes on really hard. In fact, Stamets even tells her in the first episode, don't talk so much. And like no one listens to that. Like she just talks and talks and talks.
So was that supposed to be like a shut up Wesley moment?
It was. It was such a meta moment where he's like, Tilly, you're great, but don't talk so much. It was like it's like such a like, hey, audience, we got this covered. But then she just, no one listens to that. So.
Right, right.
All right, so we have done our job here of convincing Brian to watch the first episode. We'll check back in with him at some point in time. You will watch Hot Streets on February 24th at midnight. You will put that in your TiVo right now because it's really good. It's really good.
And a lot of Star Trek actors that you know and love will be in season 2.
Why wouldn't you watch it? Why wouldn't you?
Robert Picardo on February 24th as one of their more interesting characters.
Really good character. Like, you know, we talked a little bit about season 1 and season
2. Oh, and Ray Wise. Ray Wise and Robert Picardo will be on the first night.
And then, we've got Jonathan Frakes and Jeffrey Combs coming up. You don't want to miss it. But beyond that, Brian's a good friend and a good Star Trek touchstone for this stuff. He's going to check in with him on this stuff. So, thanks for having me over. I'm actually at Brian's house right now. So,
well, yeah, thanks for coming over. And I enjoyed this very much.
Yeah, it's good to see you. So, all right, cool. I'm Mike McCafferty.
I'm Brian.
And I just want to talk about
Star Trek.